Let's pick up where we left off in the 12th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. We'll be finishing up this book tonight, Lord willing. And next week, I'd like to get into the book of Ruth. Anyway, winding this book down, I think Solomon ties all of his thoughts together, I think, really well in this closing chapter, because he uses a lot of metaphoric language in terms of describing what's going to be the end result of every single man and woman on the face of this planet. And that's, hey, we're all headed towards the grave. And, you know, in Hebrews 9, it tells us that it's appointed unto every man to die once, and then the judgment. And in Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 3:10, I believe, it talks about, hey, how we're all going to have to stand before the judgment seat of Christ as Christians. You know, we're going to still have to give an account for our lives. But one of the things that I think we always have to keep in focus is the fact that we're all under the second law of thermodynamics, which says that, hey, everything always goes from the complex to the simple. It breaks down, deteriorates, falls apart, and dies. And that's what's happened to each and every one of us. I think that for the average human, I think around the age 23, the cellular structure of the body begins to reverse itself. And you know, it's all downhill, and it begins to accelerate, especially when you hit, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old. I mean, you're beginning to really careen down this road of dilapidation. I don't know how else to call it, but this is what, you know, and just to throw this out, I think women go down there faster than men. But men die sooner than women, so
that's,
yeah. See, that's it, right? Well, the truth is, you know why men die sooner than women? Because they want to. Okay, we better not. All right, enough said on that. Anyway, this is what he's dealing with, man. Is that we are all falling apart? Is that, you know? Basically, this is the chapter. You can just almost subtitle here. And he says here, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. And you know, this first verse, it starts it off and it says, remember your Creator when you're young. There's so many times throughout Scripture that God constantly brings up this word. He says, remember, remember, remember. Because, let's face it, we have such a wretched capacity when it comes to forgetting things. I mean, I don't know how many times I've read this Bible over and over and over again, and I get really frustrated with some of the things I can't say. Well, now, where was that verse? What chapter was that? Now, you know what I'm saying? It just frustrates me that I just don't have everything on the tip of my tongue, so to speak. And it's like, hey, why? Because we're under this curse, and we can't hardly remember anything, so we have to make a concerted effort constantly to keep stirring up, by way of reminder, the things of God. When he talks about here, remember your Creator, it's not just simply a head acknowledgement. It's not sloppy sentimentality. What it is an active form of acknowledging God through the way that we live. I remember, if you go back, I think it's the first book of Samuel, the first chapter of Samuel, where he talks about a woman named Hannah. And Hannah went into the temple one day, and she was praying and praying and praying her heart out because she was barren. And she was praying out loud, and she was sobbing, and she was pouring her heart out before the Lord. Anyway, Eli the priest saw her. He thought she was drunk. He started to rebuke her. She said, no, I'm just really distraught because I'm just childless, and it's just breaking my heart. And so then Eli said, well, may the Lord grant you your prayer. Anyway, she got up and she left, and she felt much better because she connected with God in prayer. But it's interesting that the way it's worded further down, it says that, and God remembered Hannah, and he opened her womb, and then she conceived. And it's like God remembered her in a very active, positive way. In other words, he was working in her life. Same thing when he's talking about remembering God. It means, hey man, put him number one in your life. Make him the focal point of your life. Otherwise, what he's saying here, if you don't do it when you're young, what happens to us is that time in life, it begins to wear on us in such a way that it hardens us. And the older that we get, the harder and more difficult that it's going to become for us to really get our priorities right, because we get set in our ways. And that's why a lot of times God will send a lot of different, chastisements, or he will light a fire under us, so that it causes difficulties or heartbreaks or disillusionments or pain or whatever else in our life to try to get us to remember him. Because that's what we were created for, to know him, to love him, serve him with our whole heart, mind, soul, and strength. And I'm telling you, to me, the greatest tragedy in the universe is to have been born and live your life X number of years and then died and never have come to the realization of who you are and what you're doing here and where you're going and what life is all about. And unless you know Jesus Christ, and unless you've got him first in your life, unless you commit your life to God, hey man, you missed the whole point of your existence, and there's no bigger tragedy than that. So he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. In other words, they're coming. You live long enough, they're coming. Believe me. You can go down to any old folks' home, any nursing home, and you take a look around, and this is what he's talking about. These days are coming when you no longer will enjoy these days in your life. And he says, you'll have no more delight in them. In verse 2, he says, before the sun, the light, the moon, and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain. In a day that the watchmen of the house tremble, and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim. And the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And one will rise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors of the road. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags himself along, and the cape berry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. Remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed and the pitcher by the well is shattered and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Now, back up here, and what he's describing here, he's describing the human body, and he's describing it how, in metaphorical terms, and how your body begins to fall apart. How, like I said, the second law of thermodynamics kicks in, and everything begins to cave in as far as your body is concerned. And all of these are telltale signs that, hey, we are on the road to eternity. We are on the road to meeting our Maker, to standing at the judgment seat before God. But the way he describes it, I think, is very ingenious, because he says here, you know, remember your Creator, verse 2, and it says, before the sun, the light, the moon, and the stars are darkened. In other words, the older you get, the weaker your eyes become, the dimmer things become. The light of the sun and the moon and the stars, they become dimmer. All right, he says, remember you're created before then. He says, and the clouds return after the rain. In other words, you get to the point where you look at the, like I said, if you go into these nursing homes, these old folks' homes, and I've been in and out of them constantly, and I see something that's very, very sad to me, and I just pray that my parents will never end up places like that. But it's like you see these people, and their days are virtually spent sitting in a chair or a wheelchair, and they're gazing mindlessly at a wall or at the TV or out the window, or they're slouched over. And, it's like there's no life there. It says here, and the clouds return after the rain. In other words, there's nothing to look forward to. There's no silver lining in anything. I mean, you know, every day is just a kind of a drudgery, a monotony of the same old thing. There's nothing to look forward to in life. That's what he's talking about when he says the clouds return after the rain. In verse 3, in the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim. Now here's another interesting thing, the way that he words this. He says, in the day that the watchmen of the house tremble. Does anybody's translation say the days, the keeper of the house? Okay, because it just says keeper of the house. Now, if it's the keepers of the house, I think it would refer to your hands, because your house that he's referring to is your body. Paul refers to our body as a tent, and our body also refers to as our house. In other words, hey, this is just our house, all right? Our life is inside us in terms of our spirit, our soul. It's only housing our soul. Once our spirit and our soul is gone, man, the house is just going to, you know, that's going to be the end of the house, all right?
Once it's arms, then your arms.
Right.
That protected
evil. Right. See, some translations say the watchman of the house. If it's you could apply it to your legs or your hands, but I really believe it's referring to your hands, because that's the keepers of the house. In other words, you use your hands to, you know, to brush your teeth, to comb your hair, to shave your face. You know, women who put their war makeup on or whatever. You take care of yourself with your hands, right? This is what you do. It says the keepers of the house. In other words, they tremble. I've noticed this over the years, and it's becoming more and more prevalent where I work. I see this country is getting older as far as its population is concerned, because more and more I'm dealing with older people, and so many of them come through and they're shaking, they're trembling. You know, they got the Parkinson's disease or whatever. That's what he's talking about. The keepers of the house tremble, but also if you want to refer to it as your legs, you know, they're trembling too. But I really do believe it's referring to your hands, because he says here, in the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and the mighty men stoop, and the mighty men would be your legs, all right? And I can't tell you, I see it every single day, and it always sticks in the back of my mind when I see so many people walking around in walkers, on arm walkers, with canes. They're in the marked carts. If they're walking without any kind of assistance, a lot of times they're stooped over. They're walking real slow. Some people you almost see like they're shuffling along, taking about 6 inches at a time in their steps. And you look at these people and you say, you know, I can't help but think to myself, what were these people like 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago? I mean, look at them and you say, hey, we're all getting there. We're getting there at lightning speed, and we don't seem to recognize it, how quickly we're all getting there, because we're under this curse. Remember that God told Adam, he says, the day that you eat of this fruit, the day that you disobey me, you know, that day you're going to die. Well, he didn't die immediately that day, but at that day, when he disobeyed God, he set in motion the second law of thermodynamics, and he began to die. All right, he lived to be 900 and some odd years old, but he died. All right, it set into motion. Okay, all right. Okay, now don't think for 1 minute he looked like he lived for 900 years, because remember, he came directly from the hand of God, and everything was conducive to longevity. All right, so when he died, he probably looked like a 100-year-old man in our day and age. All right, but what I'm driving at here is just, if you look at how this law that God has put into effect is affecting us physically. I mean, we're all just falling apart. And, you know, I'm looking around and I'm just seeing it, and I'm feeling it myself. You know, I was out there doing all this yard work the other day, and I ripped something in my arm, you know, and I'm going, oh, here we go again, you know, another injury, you know. It's like, what the heck? You know, and it takes 3 or 4 days. Sometimes it takes months when I hurt myself, I just don't bounce back like I used to. And I look at these older people and I keep saying, well, I try to be patient with them, you know. And some have come through in my line and it's like they take 5 minutes to write a check, and I'm tapping my foot thinking, let me do that for you. You know, I feel this annoyance, and I say, like, oh, man, that's going to be me in 20 years. I better just sit here. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're all getting there. And it says here, anniversary, in that day, the watchmen of the house tremble, and the mighty men stoop, and the grinding ones stand idle because they are few. What are the grinding ones? That's your teeth. Good. It's like, you know, back then they didn't have false teeth and dentures and all these other things, right? I mean, when their teeth fell out, what happens? It's the grinding ones are few. All right? Well, this is another... Right. Well, like I said, you go into a nursing home, what do you see? You see this kind of thing, right? And every time I see these people, I'm saying, hey, there's me in another 20, 30, 40 years. And I'm saying, boy, I hope I'm gone before that. I mean, that's just the way I feel, because it says the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim. In other words, even blindness comes upon people. Of course, it was more prevalent back then. I mean, like even Isaac, you know, went blind after he turned a certain age, and so many other people in Scripture. I mean, when you get up to a certain age, sometimes you lose your sight altogether. Then it says here, and the doors of the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and the one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. Now, when it says here, the doors of the street are shut, he's talking about the house here, but I guess you can make an application to the fact that, hey, when you get old, I mean, you shut yourself in, right? And you close the door, and you pretty much live an isolated life. But he's talking about the body here. So when he says the doors of the street, I believe he's talking about, okay, when you lose your teeth, basically, You chew with your mouth completely closed, and you have very little conversation with people. That's what he's talking about. Because you can go back, I think it's in the book of Job, the 41st chapter of the book of Job. God is talking about the marine dinosaur, the Leviathan. He's talking about it to Job. He's asking questions to Job about it. And he basically referred to his mouth as being doors. And this is what I think it's referring to on the body here, as when you get the, when you get that old and you begin to lose your teeth, I mean your conversation is really has dropped off, as well as the way that you feed yourself. I mean, I'm not kidding. It's sad. I wait on all these old people. We got buses come in. They bring these buses in from these homes. These people come in, and a lot of them are buying baby food because they got no teeth to chew with, and that, you know, this is what they live on. It is Depends and baby food, stuff like that. It's like the whole thing has been reversed. And then he says here, verse 4 says, the doors of the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. In other words, you begin to lose your hearing. The sound of the grinding mill, which once you could hear, it would wake you up, it would annoy you. This irritation, now it's like you can hardly hear it. Matter of fact, in today's Newsweek front cover, they have a big, you know, front page ad about how people are losing their hearing in so many different ways today. And more and more people are going to begin to lose their hearing, I guess, because there's so much of the noise pollution that we're dealing with. But it's on the front cover of Newsweek. And here it's talking about when you're getting older, it says the grinding mill is low, and one will rise at the sound of the bird. And this is what happens a lot of times when people get old. It's like, for one thing, they go to bed early and they get kind of insomnia. They don't get really sound sleep, because very often sound sleep comes with after a hard day's work, you know, and they do nothing but basically go from chair to chair. But here they rise at the crack of dawn. And then what does it say here? It says, one will rise at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song will. Daughters of song will sing softly. What's he saying there? He's saying this, but when you get up to an age, you begin to lose your voice. I mean, daughters of songs are refers to women who used to be in the opera room, women who had a melodious voice, who could sing, you know, and thrill people, you know, with her musical ability or singing ability. Well, now, you know, her voice is gone. It's shot through. It's finished. And verse five, it says, furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors of the road. And, you know, this is so true when you get old. You ever see these old people drive their cars? I mean, I really, really pray for patience when I'm behind them. I mean, they're kind of all over the road and they're going real slow. And it's like, why they drive so slow? It's because of what we're just reading here. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and terrors of the road. One of the unfortunate things too is because old people are extremely vulnerable, and they shut themselves in. You know, one of the reasons is because they're easy pickings for purse snatchers or people who want to take advantage of them. And even today, there's so many swindlers and con men who are robbing these people blind with all of their cons and stuff. But he's talking about here, he says the terrors of the road, and then he talks about the almond tree blossoms. Well, the first tree to blossom in the spring is the almond tree. And you ever see the blossoms of an almond tree? Pure white. It covers the whole tree in white. And so it's talking about, your hair is turning completely white if it hadn't all fallen out. And he says, and the grasshopper drags himself along. Well, you ever see a dying grasshopper or a dying insect, dying bird? A grasshopper, instead of hopping or flying or going from place to place, you know, it just drags itself along. Well, this is what I see constantly when I'm dealing with people, is they're dragging themselves along with walkers or with canes or they're in the mart carts, or, you know, they've got some kind of assistance where, you know, they just don't have a spring in their step. And again, it's like it's so difficult, I think, for us to try to put ourselves in that position, because it just seems like it's light years down the road, and yet it's not. You turn around, you wonder, where has my life gone? You know, you all of a sudden you're an old person, and you say, how did I get to be like this? It's just, it's happening to all of us, and we're getting there real quick. So he says here, the grasshopper drags himself along, and the capeberry is ineffective. And the capeberry was a kind of an aphrodisiac or something that it's from a shrub in the Mediterranean. They would use it for a condiment or use it for a spice, but they also had, it was thought to be to increase your sexual powers. What he's talking about when you get up in age, you no longer have sexual desires. Or if you, for men, they may still have a sexual desire, but they a lot of times they're just ineffective. And I thought it was kind of interesting. This is today's the U.S. News and World Report, and this is the latest issue. And we're talking about here how when you get up in age, you lose your either your sexual desire or your sexual function. And here they had this little article here about Viagra and vision loss. And they're just now discovering this. It says, hate to rain on your parade, guys, but the Food and Drug Administration is investigating rare reports of blindness in men using Viagra and Cialis. The FDA was huddling with marketers of the impotent drug after receiving 42 reports of permanent vision loss. 38 Viagra users and 4 Cialis users went permanently blind. Okay, and using this product to try to enhance, you know, their sexual performance. Well, this is what happened when you get older. Well, it was so funny. I'm just saying, this is
the latest running comedic relief.
Huh? Just like your mama said.
Your grandmother.
Yeah.
You'll
well.
Be fine.
Well, I didn't want to go down that road. I'm just talking to Sal. Hey.
You can't
I'm,
talk about this stuff in front of women.
We're not down a road where you call
hey. You right lose now. All your hair.
Okay. Well, hey. Hang on a second.
That's where you go first.
Okay. Now, here, Kevin's got to edit all this now.
Huh?
I don't.
We're going to have to put a rating on this one.
Hey, all right. Hey, this is God's word. I'm not the one who's making this up. He's just saying, all right? Hey, man, he's take a good, hard, cold look at your life because, you know, when everything starts sagging and drooping and you're dragging yourself along, you know, and you got no sexual desire, this is what he's talking about. This is where we're all headed. We're headed
You'll
for...
Thankfully.
Hey, this is really serious. I don't know. You guys are turning... All right, let's back... Come on, get serious.
Let us laugh and then get serious.
You think we're all so glad we came.
Also what?
We're all so glad we came. It's just like really, you know.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, man. Make it.
Put voices on.
Hey. Okay, so verse 5 says, furthermore, men are afraid of high places and of the terrors of the road, and the almond tree blossoms, and the grasshopper drags himself along, and the cape berry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home, while mourners go about in the street. Now, he just says something here that's just a fact of life, okay? I mean, this is a sad thing, but, in less than 2 years, buried my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my sister-in-law, and every day I go to work, I drive by the cemetery that they're buried in. And I'm honest, I say this to my shame, a lot of times I don't even give it a thought because I'm so focused on what I'm doing at the moment. I'm usually listening to a tape or I'm praying or something and I'm thinking of what I got to do at work. And it's like, hey, this is where it's at. In other words, these people were very much a part of my life and now they're gone. Look what it says here. He says, for man goes to his eternal home while the mourners go about in the street. And he says in verse 6, he says, remember him. Now, this is the second time he repeats himself for emphasis. We got to remember God before it's too late. He says, remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed and the pitcher by the well is shattered and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Now, here again, he's using metaphoric language and he's describing how the body was just going to eventually fall apart and die. When he talks about here, he says, the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed. I think it's kind of significant because the silver cord, I think it's referring to your spinal cord, your nervous system. You know, when you see people who really get old and they, like I said, they're shaking and, their nerves are shot, their mind isn't firing like it used to. It says the golden bowl is crushed. The golden bowl is your mind. How many people today have Alzheimer's? I lived next door to a woman when I was just a little kid. Her husband and her come into the store all the time. I see them all the time. And, now she's come down with Alzheimer's. And it's kind of a really sad thing. And I think enough of us have known people who have heard about people who have Alzheimer's. When you see Alzheimer's, just think of what Solomon says here. The golden bowl, that's your mind, is crushed. It's no longer useful. It's lost its effectiveness. these people, you know, they don't even know who their own kids are half the time. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they're at. You got to keep an eye on them all the time, because if they walk out the door, they're going to get lost. They don't know where they're at. It's a sad state of affairs, isn't it? But that's what he's saying. He says, hey, remember your Creator before these things start happening, because it's the sad fact of life. When he talks about the silver cord is broken, golden bowl is crushed. Solomon says something in Proverbs, and I don't know if I can quote it correctly off the top of my head, but he says, like, a fitting word in season is like apples of gold and bowls of silver. So, in other words, when you have your mind and you have your nervous system intact and you're really sharp, you're able to give answers that are like Solomon says, apples of gold and bowls of silver. Well, once your mind goes, it's really a tragic thing. I mean, I pray to God, it doesn't happen to my parents or myself or, you know, people that I really love. I mean, you'd much rather just see them, God take them home, than to see this type of deterioration happen to the point where their sense of dignity and self-worth has really been diminished. See, it's really a sad thing, but it's part of our broken world. It's part of living in under the curse. And so that's why I'm saying, you got to remember God now. Now while you have opportunity. Because like I said, when you get older, I mean, I've tried to witness to people in these old folks' homes. It's like, it really goes in one ear and out the other. I mean, I really get nowhere. It always surprises me. There's a 62-year-old guy that comes into our store, and he walks around with a cane. But thank God he started listening to the tapes on Revelation, and I'm giving him tapes all the time. He came to a saving knowledge of God, and what surprised me the most is, you know, here he is at his age. It's not impossible, but I'm just saying it's usually when you get up in age, the harder it is for you to really remember your Creator and really get serious with Him. Then he says here, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. What's the pitcher by the well? It's your heart. And he says the wheel at the cistern is shattered. The wheel of the cistern, in other words, your circulatory system. It's like, you know, your heart is pumping and it circulates this blood through your veins. Of course, it's through your capillaries and your veins and your arteries and whatnot. It's like talking about your whole heart and your circulatory system is just collapsing. I mean, most people, either they're going to die of cancer or they're going to die of heart failure. Heart disease. And that's what he's talking about here. Once your heart gives out, your circulatory system gives out, then what? Then verse 7 it says, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. That's where it's all going to end. He says, then the dust will return to the earth as it was. He doesn't even say body. He says the dust will return to the earth. Interesting thing. This is what God made us out of. He made us out of the dust of the ground. And it's kind of interesting. If I'm not mistaken, I think what I read somewhere is something like 98 different chemical compositions that make up our body. And you can find all of these in the soil, in the earth. And when we die, the Bible basically saying, you know, from dust you are, from dust thou art, from dust thou shalt return. I mean, this is where we came from, and this is where we're going. And then he says here, but that's not the end of it, because he said, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. So this is what I mean. When people have only taken various portions of this particular book, and then they quote it, like sometimes the Jehovah's Witnesses will do, to try to say, well, there's no life after death, there's soul sleep, and there's no consciousness after you die. Well, no, that's not what it's saying here. It's saying your body, yeah, your body's going to go back to the dust and have no consciousness, but your spirit, your soul, will very much be alive. And what does it do? It returns to the one who gave it. And what do we return to God for? We return to Him for judgment. That's what he's talking about here. He says, the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. So then he says, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. In other words, it's all meaningless. When we went through and we read about everything he attempted in life, all right, he had it all. If there was anybody in this world, anybody in the history of mankind, who could say that, hey man, I found the meaning to life under the sun, apart from God, Solomon could have, because he was the richest man of his day. I mean, they were talking about when during his day it was like silver was so abundant, it was like stones on the road. I mean, he was the wealthiest man alive. He, as far as his sexual fulfillment, he had 1,000 different women to choose from. He had endless variety to fulfill himself. But he said that of pleasure, what does it accomplish? If it is an end in and of itself, it's vanity. It's meaningless. It's pointless. He really pursued wisdom in the sense that he pursued knowledge. In other words, people today who pursue their degrees or try to accumulate as many certificates as they can as far as education. I mean, I've said this before. I mean, a PhD without Christ, without God, I mean, it's just a postal digger going nowhere. I mean, their life is meaningless, just like Solomon's saying. It's all vanity. It's pointless. If you look at other things that Solomon did, I mean, he got into the arts. He got into singing. He got into all kinds of things where he tried to find meaning. But again, if it was just under the sun, if it's just for the hearing now, it's just vanity. It's meaningless. It's pointless. He had more material things. I mean, he built homes for himself, palaces for himself. He built gardens and irrigation systems. I mean, he had it all. But he found no fulfillment in it, in and of itself. He, after it was done, he kept saying, is this all there is? Is this all there is? Is this all that life has to offer? And so again and again, he comes to that same conclusion. It's all meaningless. It's all pointless. Why? Because unless you have God where he belongs in your life, in your relationship with your life, unless you, you know, are in tune with knowing him, loving him, serving him with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, you're missing the point to everything, and everything is empty. Everything is fruitless. Everything is pointless. Everything is vanity. I like the way Augustine put it, a man's heart is restless, O Lord, until it rests in thee. We were made for God. And unless we are in our proper relationship with God, we are always going to be restless. You know, but yet the devil, he always has this proverbial carrot dangling before our nose, just saying, hey, listen, if you just get this one more thing, you'll be happy, you'll be fulfilled, you'll be complete. I don't care what it is. It could be a boat, it could be a house, it could be a car, it could be a spouse, it could be a family, it could be anything under the sun. The devil's always there to say, if you just get this one more thing, you'll be complete. You'll be happy. You'll be fulfilled. Your life will be filled with meaning. But Solomon said, no, I've done it all. I've tried it all. I've been there. I've done that. And I'm telling you right now, it's vanity. It's vanity. It's empty. It's meaningless. In and of itself, it's all pointless. Unless we have a proper relationship with God, it is all pointless. So when he concludes that verse 8, when he says, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity, that's what he means. And then in verse 9, it says, now this is the concluding verses of this book, and I think he ties it in really well, because he says in verse 9, in addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered and searched out and arranged many proverbs. The preacher sought to find delightful words and to write words of truth correctly. The words of a wise man are like goads, and the masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. But beyond this, my son, be warned, the writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person, because God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Now, listen, see the way he concludes everything, he concludes this book. Let's back up to that verse 9. In addition to being a wise man, the preacher, which is Solomon, also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered and searched out and arranged many proverbs. Well, Solomon arranged, if I'm not mistaken, it's like 3,000 different proverbs. We don't have them all, of course. But the way he says it here, I think, is significant. I mean, this guy didn't just shoot from the hip. This guy was the wisest man that ever lived, and he thought everything through. He evaluated everything, and he put his thoughts and his evaluations and his conclusions down on paper. And he arranged it in such a way that he wanted it to be as goads to motivate people. You know what a goad is? A goad is almost like a fireplace poker that you would use to motivate a dumb animal to go in a certain direction. I don't know whether it be a sheep or a cow or whatever. I don't know, to try to get them into a pen or a slaughtering house or whatever. This is what goads are. They're meant to motivate us, to inspire us, to bring us to a higher level in terms of the way we look at life. That's what he's talking about here. When he says, and he pondered and searched out and arranged many proverbs, the preacher sought to find delightful words and write the words correctly. The words of a wise man are like goads, the master of these collections, like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. The way you, look at the way he words that. They are given by one shepherd. Who's the one shepherd?
Jesus.
It's Jesus, given to us by Christ. In other words, this just confirms the fact that this book here is divinely inspired. A number of people throughout the ages, even today, have questioned the authenticity, or not the authenticity, but whether this book even belongs in the canon of scriptures, because they think, you know, they don't see the divine inspiration to it, because he seems so negative, he seems so pessimistic, so nihilistic on his outlook on life. But again, God has this, cast this in there for a purpose, and I think it's one of the most enriching books. If you just sit at the feet of Solomon and just read his words, you read it over and over and over again. I wrestled with his book many, many times, wondering, why is he saying it like this? Why is he rewording it like that? How come he said this instead of that? How come it seems contradictory to what other things have said? And yet you have to take it in light of all Scripture and see where he's coming from, and doggone, you see the guy's right. Because one of the things that just amazed me when I read this book, because I read it and I think to myself, this is the wisest guy to ever live. And his conclusion that he stated no less than six times was that basically there's no better thing for a man to do in life than to enjoy his food and his drink and enjoy the labor that he does under the sun and the wife of his youth. And it seemed so simple to me. I thought, is that his conclusion? Are you kidding me? You know. But then the more I studied it, the more I read it, the more I pondered it, the more I reflected upon it, the more I said, you know, the guy is absolutely right. He's just basically saying, you know what? Love God with your whole heart, mind, soul, and strength, and then enjoy your life. Enjoy the simple things of life, the very simple things in life that we take so much for granted. What would life be without them? I mean, the very simple things in life. We think, oh man, we got a pile of piles and piles and piles of gold and silver and precious stones, or have our portfolio bulging at the seams. And what kind of value would that have if you could have all of that, but you could never have another drink of water or a drink of anything? I mean, you know, all of a sudden, something that's very, very simple, very, very ordinary, very, very common, that we take so much for granted, all of a sudden would have more value. A cup of water would have more value than all the gold in the world. See what I'm saying? It's like, hey man, the simple things in life, you need to be able to just sit back and enjoy them, recognizing that it's from the hand of God, it's a gift from God, you know, and just appreciate it as coming from God. I mean, I'm telling you, I hardly ever take a glass of water without, with every swallow in my heart, just thanking God, because I think, no, this is such a simple, ordinary thing, but what would life be without it? The simple things in life, rather than always sweating the, you know, things that really don't matter. In the end analysis, what does it matter? And he also says here in that verse 12, he says, but beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. And I think what he's saying here is too, is like, okay, especially today, I mean, books are being coming off the printing presses by the thousands every single day. I mean, you go to any Barnes & Noble, go to any Borders bookstore, and I'm in these bookstores all the time. There are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of books. And sometimes I look at all these books and I say, man, I wish I could pour all this information in my head and retain it all. You know, I just wish I could. And it's just a fraction of what's out there. But, you know, Solomon's saying basically, you know what? You got to be very, very selective in what you read, because there's so much stuff out there, all right, that you're never going to be able to read it all. Second of all, 95% of it is just all garbage. It's just all pointless, worthless, useless. So you got to be kind of selective, and because too much devotion to these things is just going to wear down your body. You need to have a balance in your life. You really do. I mean, you know, I've read thousands of books, and I read constantly, and I'm always listening to the tapes. But I always try to have a balance. You know, I'm constantly jogging or something to keep my life balanced. And, you know, so what I have to do is I have to be selective. And the way to be selective to me is, okay, put first things first. God's Word's got to come first. You know, study that. Study extra-biblical literature. Find yourself books that are written by what I consider to be wise people who have their priorities right, who have their focus right, because they can teach you a lot.
So that's, I think that's what he's talking about when he says this in verse 12. But beyond this, my son, be warned. The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearing to the body. And in verse 13, the conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. Look at his conclusion. I mean, is that simple and straightforward and to the point or what? Ask anybody. Next person you come across outside of the Bible study. Just say, what's the conclusion? What's your conclusion to life? Ask him, what's your conclusion to life? Okay. Is it winning the lotto? I mean, what is your conclusion to life? This is it right here. All right. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is to fear God. To fear God means what? It means we have to recognize that, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to be accountable to God for what I do and what I don't do and what I fail to do and what I... All of these things. In other words, a person who's tempted to go out there and steal from their neighbor, if they fear God, in the back of their mind, they're going to say, you know what? God's watching me and I'm going to have to account to him for this. So I better not do it. That's fear of God. See what I'm saying? You're just not going to do evil because you recognize, hey, I'm going to have to account to God for this. A person who has no fear of God is going to go right ahead and do it without giving it a second thought. Right? But that's what he's saying here. In conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments. Why? Because this applies to every person. Nobody's going to get out from under it. We're all going to have to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. Every one of us, saved and unsaved. And then he says here, because God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. I'm going to read that again. He says, because God will bring every act to judgment. This is basically what Jesus said, that everything that's hidden will be, you know, brought into the light. Everything is done in secret will be shouted from the rooftop. He said, every idle word that men shall speak, they shall render an account thereof in the day of judgment. And you read this, it says, because God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil, you know, is going to come to light on judgment day. And I know when we went through the third chapter of this book, we were talking about, Solomon talked about time. And he talked about there's a time for everything under the sun. And that's basically what our life is distilled down to, is how much time we have left. And, you know, I've mentioned this to you before, but I can never get it out of my mind, in a sense, when I think about these type of things, is that, you know, Einstein came up with the space-time continuum, where he basically said you can't really separate time and space. He basically said the further out in space you go, the farther back in time you go. And the way he arrived at that conclusion, like I said, the way he described it, he says that, like, if he had somebody standing on the sun and they were looking through a powerful telescope and looking down on us on Earth, it takes about eight and a half minutes for the light which travels something like 186,200 miles per second to get from the sun to us. It's 93 million miles to the sun. Well, it takes eight minutes. So, in other words, if you're observing people from the viewpoint of the sun and looking down on them on Earth, what you're seeing is not what they're doing right at that moment. What you're seeing is what they did 8 minutes ago. And if you go out to the closest star, which is like Alpha Centauri, which is about three and a half light years from Earth, if you were looking through a telescope and looking down at Earth through that telescope, well, you wouldn't be seeing what we're doing right now. You would be seeing what we did three and a half years ago. And if you go out further back in space, if you go back to the Andromeda Galaxy or wherever you want to go in space, the farther back you go, the further back in time. In other words, if you go back far enough, conceivably, they say that you could see Adam and Eve doing what they were doing, or you could see Moses giving the Ten Commandments. So you could see, in other words, in a sense, okay, now this is theory, all right? I'm not trying to be dogmatic here. I'm just simply saying that it's Einstein's theory of the space-time continuum, where it's basically saying everything that we've ever done, we're continuing to do somewhere out in time and space. Okay? So, in other words, when you say, when God is going to bring everything unto judgment, all right, well, believe me, you can't sit there and say, oh, well, he'll never remember that. Well, it's all out there somewhere, right? Right? Okay? I mean, this is the bottom line. All right? So, does anybody have anything you want to add or share?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Would Solomon call another name?
Call what?
Another name. In my Bible.
Is it Jedediah?
No, it has this. Instead of saying like the preacher.
Oh.
Q-O.
Well, that, you know what that means? That means preacher.
It does.
Okay, that means preacher. All right, but that wasn't his name. Okay, he was called Jedidiah, which means beloved of the Lord, but his name was given to him as Solomon. All right, but that there means preacher. What I don't.
Yeah,
right. Right, that means preacher. That's another word for preacher. Or yeah. Yeah, but like I say, some translations have that. My Bible doesn't have it, but I've read enough translations that do, and that's all that means. Anybody have anyone to add or share?